Okay.
Well, the core was probably the way that most of the students, large number, got through college with board and room. Some lived in the place. We didn't. You won't believe this, but our bill was $26 a month for food. And we weren't, there was no room to get into Klein Court, which was near us, so we ate there all the time. And then, of course, we were real neophytes when we arrived, so we got assigned the central kitchen, and that's where we were doing pot washing. And then after that, I ended up hashing, serving on the tables, and then the senior year, though, I got a better job. I was painting. Hmm. I had to paint, and I was painting the inside of the women's dorms, you know, that was a very much kind of thing. But we got good food, you had so many hours to work, and it was well done, and he gave a very large contribution to the co-op. Whole thing, I think it was something like almost $100,000. So that, and that, you know, that sort of defines him. Thing I can't emphasize enough about him is that, yes, he had a lot of money, but he gives it by the tons away to people, to very good things. But it's the most amazing thing that you don't see people doing that anymore. And I'm aware of many of his contributions. But the co-ops really took good care of us.
So were your rooms part of the co-op, or they were
there were about three rooms in this dilapidated house just above the co-op.
Okay.
It was not part of the co-op.
And so did you share a room, or did
you... We shared a room.
I see.
We had two beds in the room, and we had a separate bathroom, shower, what have you. You know.
And what were... I know he was, at the time, he was... well, you both must have been quite busy with your studies, mm-hmm. But... Did you have any common hobbies or activities, or...?
We didn't have common ones, but we did participate in a lot of things. The big thing at that time, in fact, Cal went to the Rose Bowl 2 years we were there. And I won't forget the first time. We went down on a train, and these two lovely co-eds came up and wanted to know if we would like to play bridge. Well, we could play pinochle, but we didn't know how to play bridge. I said, oh, God, of all the skills that we needed. And then we went to eat in a Chinese restaurant, and he had ordered a steak, and it was so tough, it was unreal. He tried to cut it, and it was airborne. Just went across the... But I had another classmate who was also pre-med, and we went out on the old red trolleys to Pasadena, and we went to the Rose Bowl then. It was quite a time, but in fact, the big game, we even took my dad with his snow white hair, with his cap on, to sit in the rooting section, and the rooters were just wonderful. They thought he was great. They were always gonna pass him around and got him in there. It was special. We didn't participate in the riots that went on at that time. The city, got all upset because when they went with a float by the reviewing stand, they just pumped water on all the dignitaries. And then there was an ice cream truck that was going up Bancroft and it was spilling gasoline out of a full tank all the way down the bottom. And people didn't know that. They built a bonfire and it went shoop under the truck. And the guy is passing out all of the ice cream just to get rid of it. And so then the next thing, the fire department arrives, and they had a red engine. Well, you can't have a red engine at Berkeley. So they painted it blue and gold. So that one riot was, I think, 48, but it was just too much.
So as, are there any other stories from those Berkeley years of Gordon Moore or of the two of you that come to mind?
Well, we would usually drive home on the weekends. We didn't spend time on the weekends, and that's how we avoided the first riot that the city really came down on Cal. And at the same time, of course, Betty was very active in this part, and she would ride back to us periodically. She was raised over here in Campbell. And the, but we would go to the basketball games and that kind of thing, you know, but not, we didn't join into all the big kinds of things. We were mostly tied up with what we were doing.
In a way, now you were coming home on the weekends and you would stay with your family?
Yeah.
You personally?
Yeah, right.
And similarly for him?
Yeah, right. And then on Sunday, we would play pinochle with my dad and then drive back to Berkeley, you know.
And so, in some ways, your lives were still centered over here rather than...
Yeah, and, you know, I think about that periodically and whether how much I missed or not missed, but most pre-med people were just... busy. The schedule, the requirements now for med school who are applying are so different. They're just I had a guy in my class who was a philosophy major from Stanford, and we had to take everything in the world.
Where did you, so as you're in your senior year at Berkeley, and Gordon Moore's deciding to go to Caltech. How are you deciding on where to go to med school?
Well, what I did was I applied to mostly the West Coast schools, Stanford and Cal, what have you. In fact, the dean of admissions at Cal, I had taught his son to swim in Belmont one summer, and I thought, well, that would be helpful. But the overwhelming number of veterans applying said no, and so that Gordon was really kind. He had been accepted at Caltech, and he was waiting for my acceptance to med school before we had a party about it, and that didn't occur. And then in 1948, nobody believed that Harry Truman would pass a draft law, and he did, and that's when I joined the Naval Reserve. So every week I would go to reserve meetings at Treasure Island, and then while I was waiting for that, we graduated on the 15th of June, and the 25th of June as the Korean War started, and I was a reserve hospital corpsman.
So called up right away?
Right away, yeah. I went down to Stanford. My commanding officer thought I should try to get a microbiology degree from Stanford, and I got down there for a couple of months, and our whole division went in. So.
And then you were in Korea for how long?
I was in Korea for a very short time. I was at the Naval Hospital in Okno for a while. Then I got assigned to the Fleet Marine Force. And the 1st Marine Division, and I went to Camp Pendleton and all, and we went over for a short time, and then I got assigned to the Navy OCS in Newport, Rhode Island, and I went back there for 4 months, and then...
Time that second?
The second time was longer because of the amount of training that I had to undergo, but the time in Korean waters was very short because we went into the Wonsan invasion, and that was a disaster. So that it cost me about 5 years total. And then when I got out, I reapplied to all the schools. But back east, too. And then we were married. And she was pregnant with my son. And oh, the admission guys all blew their stock. How could I be doing it? First of all, I was too old. I was 26. I was married, and my wife was pregnant, and you want to go to medical school? You know, they were really terrible. I was teaching at the medical school at Stanford. I was working on my master's PhD, and I took my master's and then went back. But they wouldn't, I could teach in the med school, but I couldn't be accepted there because I was too old, married, and I and the dean of admissions had a nose-to-nose conversation. And next day, Dr. Arthur Miller said, you know, Bob, what you said to him was correct, but he's the dean of admissions, so what we're going to do is we're going to find you a school where they take old people who are married. And I said, oh, that'd be good. So they got me into Hanover in Philadelphia.
Right. Did you... then did your did you keep in touch at all with Gordon Moore during the after the war or
during the war? I saw Gordon and Betty down in Southern California, and I never realized what wartime barracks are in terms of lack of color and what have you. And I remember when they picked me up, we went to a grocery store, and oh, that was this beautiful thing, you know, it's wonderful. And we drove up to a town down there called Montrose, and that was the name of my ship, Montrose. And that was the last time I saw him and Betty. Now, I don't know, I assume that they must have gotten married while I was overseas or what, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they got married right before they went down to Pasadena.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that must have been right around the same time that you were being mobilized.
Yeah, right. Because we got a whole division when they... Of course, the whole division didn't go in. It was half the division decided if they stopped going to meetings, they wouldn't be called in. And so the commanding officer said, if you don't go, we're going to turn your name into the draft board. Well, they had a female yeoman with an IQ of 1 who typed up the 2 lists and sent the wrong one to the draft board. So I'm overseas, and my dad has 3 U.S. Marshals show up at our house in Redwood City at that time to arrest me for draft dodging. And I was the 1st Marine Division. And I had to get a letter from E.O. Smith.
After going to med school at Hahnemann, did you come back immediately to the West
Coast? Yeah, we did. I have a lot of allergies, you can hear the dang stuff, but my wife wanted to stay. It was a beautiful little town called Haddonfield right across from Philadelphia. And we had made a lot of good friends, but the allergies were just too much. I was almost asthmatic. And so we came back, and I chose Highland, Alameda County for an internship. And I applied to about 10. I got accepted at all of them. But what's hilarious about med school is when you get accepted in one school, then all of them want you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, no, Hahnemann did that. They got me right off the bat. That's where we're going. We had a AAA map we laid out the night before we left. I said, well, we're here. We're going here. And we went to Highland, Alameda, which was one of our toughest times. I got $90 a month, and I had to buy my uniforms out of that. And we had 2 children then. And it was 36 on, 12 off, 36 on, 12 off.
Wow.
But UC San Francisco was the primary people there. And it was, one of Ann's favorite stories is having to divide an egg between the 2 kids. And it was a tough year. And then I went to Stanford in cancer research, and we got a raise, though. We got $125 a month. And that's where we were there for 3 years.
And then did you go into private practice?
Private practice in 1963.
In Los Gatos, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. and did you? Well, I guess did you have any contact with Gordon Moore?
No, because he had gone from he went from Caltech, my understanding, mm-hmm. to Silver Springs, Maryland.
Right,
and he was working on a lot of highly classified things at sure. that time. And then when he came back out, he started with Shockley and then went on, he and I don't know when Andy Grove joined him, but they did eventually go off on their own. And Silicon Valley is a, and my wife, my daughter works in that, she's an HR director. That's a total different world. And so is medicine, a total different world. So we were just different worlds. And the only contact I had was with his brother when they came in, and then his brother's wife would bring the child in. But then that was the last time. And we just grew up in two different worlds. When I did the same thing as I'm doing with yourself in my office, with the alumni of the year, and they came in and wanted me to talk about what we did at Berkeley too. And then the next time I saw him was at the presentation a few years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And did you get a chance to reconnect a little bit at that event?
We talked a little bit, but not a lot. It was a big thing.
Sure.
He was standing outside because nobody knew who he was, you know, and so I saw him at Gordy. He was always known as Gordy Moore to me. So that he's a guy who got fat. And so we went in and I sat at the table with his family. he's got the two sons were there.
Right. You know. Well, I wanted to then maybe to close with just a couple questions, 3-4 questions. One is about just to ask you to reflect on the changes that have taken place in this area, in this geographical area, in part caused by your former roommate, the whole Silicon Valley semiconductor phenomenon. How has the region changed since the two of you were in high school?
Well, when we were first here, one of the big things was to come down, when we first lived down here, was to come down for Blossom Festival. The whole valley was just beautiful blossoms of all kinds of fruit trees. And then when we first got here in, I remember in the, in the middle 60s or 63, 64, we were still at Stanford and we wanted to find a place to live. We were going to buy a house or maybe rent, what have you. And we would come down over here, Saratoga, Sunnyvale Road, and the farmers were selling all of their farms for $1 million. And all of a sudden we had all these millionaires here, and most of the homes, including here, had fruit trees in the backyard. And of course they're hard to take care of. And so suddenly all these blossom festivals just disappeared. There's a few, there's one in Sunnyvale, Olson's cherry orchard, and I think there's only 4 acres left.
Hmm.
And then this new thing, my daughter has been climbing the ladder through all these places. She's vice president of Shutterfly now.
Hmm.
And she has gone through many of these as vice president. And in fact, on my roll-top desk that I still have in my office, he had a little chip. I'd never seen a chip before. And so then suddenly the income skyrocketed around here. The orchards disappeared. The pressure increased. The cost of housing was enormous. And they just kept building more and more, and they're still doing it. And so that this whole beautiful valley was taken up by all the chip organizations. And then when the crash came in the middle 90s, I think it was, boy, a lot of people on this block. You got what, you should have bought Google at 800 or something, my God. So we were seeing people's like HP. The guy last year made $19 million. Exxon's parachute was for almost $500 million. And I thought, what is this? You know, this is crazy. But then you get over to what Gordy's done is that one of his comments was hilarious, was he had $20 billion and he put it in four groups of $5 billion each. And somebody asked him about this. He was sitting at one of the meetings and he said, I've never had so much trouble giving money away.
Well, to just to pick up on that comment, you know, do you have any reflections on what this person you knew as a very young man, mm-hmm. about what he's been able to do from a technical point of view, from an industrial or business point of view, and now from a philanthropic point of view? Would you ever have expected it?
He said that at his presentation. He said, I was in the right place at the right time. And he attributes all of his position now to that he was there at the right time to get this, and he got into this big wave that was going on. But as far as the technical part is concerned, I mean, it takes my own daughter to show me what a chip looks like. I don't know this stuff. And I don't think he's really changed that much. I think that the huge amount of money that these people make is secondary. As I mentioned to you, I said he's what a CEO should be. He's, I'm sure that he's, I would be surprised to see him holler at anybody at work. Now, I don't know that, but I would be surprised. He comes from a very humble background and very quiet people. And I think he's probably a fairly private person as well. But then when he accumulated, he used to live in Los Altos, and then they moved to Woodside. And it's then when he decided to share all of this enormous wealth with everybody, and did. The building at Berkeley is one, the co-op. Some idiot in the cooperative newsletter that comes occasionally was criticizing what has Gordon Moore given to the co-op. Dumb thing to ask, and he had given $100,000, and they had not made anything big deal about it, and that's just exactly what you expect. Did I tell you about the United Fund?
No.
Okay. United Fund went sour. They pulled all kinds of stunts to make everybody give more and what have you, and they almost went bankrupt. Wrote a check for $1 million to United Fund, and saved them. And never made a big deal about it. And that's the kind of people they are, I think.
Thinking about Gordon Moore's successes technologically and from a business point of view, you know, you would think that he might be competitive or ambitious. Did you see any of those types of traits?
No, I never saw. We have a lot of competitive, ambitious people that we see. You know, I take care of people from this whole area, but mostly in this end of the valley, and they're make enormous amounts of money. You know, but I think the one thing was that they weren't competing because they were the only ones. Mm-hmm. See, in other words. I think Cisco now makes a lot of chips, but Intel always made more than anybody else. And I don't think that it all came. It wasn't a matter of a blatant ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Two last questions. One is, you were talking a little bit about Gordon Moore's character, humble, quiet, mm-hmm. private, his mm-hmm. sort of values. If you had to answer the question, you know, what do those values reflect, or where did they come from? How would you answer that?
I would say that they came from his family. I would say that these were good earth kind of people. In other words, I don't know whether his older brother is alive or not at this point.
He's deceased.
Okay. But I'm willing to bet that he was a person in agriculture at that level and never made a big thing about it, and probably did fine. And his mother and dad were just raised him at like that, low-key people.
Last question is, if you think about the story of Gordon Moore's life, it's a story that's by and large taken place, with the exception of going to Silver Springs and the exception of 2-3 years in Pasadena, you know, 90% of it has happened within, let's say, a 30-mile radius around Santa,
right. Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, around in the Bay Area.
That's right.
Do you think there's anything, so it is a, his story is very much a Bay Area story. Do you think there's yes. anything about the Bay Area that uniquely informs his story? Or I'm just trying to tease out the, you know, the Bay Area really is the context for his story, and if you have any thoughts or reflections
on
that.
In other words, he realized a new device, a chip, which had not been done before. And he realized how important that was, and also he also came up with this Moore's Law about how many more each year kind of thing, and realized that this is what we got to do. And it wasn't meant as a economic type of thing. He just realized, oh wow, it's kind of like discovering penicillin and realizing how much it could be used. He discovered this device, and then he also, I guess Andy must have been with him at that time, decided that Shockley was not the person to continue doing this.
Mm-hmm.
He was essentially crazy. But his intuition, his insight to what he had in his hand was something. At our med school reunion, they had the guys in 50 years who had these plates, microbiology plates, who also saw the mold, but didn't see it killing the bugs.
Oh.
At the same time as Fleming said, hey. And that's what really Gordon did.
Right, was to have that realization.
Right, yeah, because it's, and then he ended up, as I said before, whatever a CEO should be. Yeah.
I think that exhausts all of the questions that I had. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't, or any other area?
Remember, I think we've covered as much as where old minds remember going on. But let's say he was a very, very studious guy in college, for sure. And he, the thing that he's doing now is just phenomenal. There's a group that are buying up chunks of preserved land all over, and he's a member of that group too. And so that every time I turn around, I find something else that he's doing, I think, how neat, how great that is. Because he's unique. Now, Gates is doing some of this, but as the guy said, you're not a JFK, Gates is not Gordon Moore.
Well, great. Well, let me switch this off.